ACDCfans.net. What is going on? This is a long time coming. Let me tell you that we're very grateful that you guys tuned in for our quasi-informal debut episode with the interview with Mike Fraser, who of course mixed AC/DC's Power Up album, but we are here on the first official edition of the ACDCfans.net podcast. John Alba here, joined by two of my comrades who I've waited a long time to lay down this audible chocolate with. We'll start with Toast. Toast, what's cooking, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you, John? It's been a year and a half in the making, you know?
Yes.
It's a long time coming.
And we'll get into that momentarily. I'm glad that you're able to join us. Where are you joining us from?
I'm in Stirling, Scotland, so central Scotland. Very cold outside, but
hello,
ready to rock.
So in other words, if no one understands a word you're saying, that's what we can blame it on.
We'll transcribe it.
Got it. And we're also joined by Spellbound, Spelly, the right hand of Stevie Young himself. What's up, man?
I'm here. You know.
That's it? That's all you got for us? We've been waiting a year and a half to lay this thing down. That's the best you got for me?
That's the most eddy thing I've ever heard.
Well,
I'm not here to make a name for myself. Look, I put myself out to play in the style of Malcolm. I put myself out to play in the style of Stevie. I'm just here to do what I do, man. And
I feel that.
You know,
that's deep. I get it. Well, we appreciate you guys listening to this debut edition of the ACDCfans.net podcast. This is a project the three of us have wanted to start for a long time, dating back all the way to when the first few pictures of AC/DC surfaced in the Vancouver warehouse. Seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah, it's 2 years in the making, yeah. I think it's been such a roller coaster of events, really. I think a lot of people in August of 2018 thought, Christ, it'll be here in 2 months. And then 6 months later, they thought, Christ, it's coming now. And then another 6 months later, they thought, oh, it must be now. And I think a lot of people halfway through lost hope in a way. But now here we are in the back end of what I think is one of the greatest PR campaigns by an artist or a company ever. So, you know, I've got a lot to be thankful for. I guess a lot we've got to be thankful for the wait as well, because it's added to the hype. I don't know.
Spelly, you're someone who's been plugged in, no pun intended, with this band for a long time, and they've meant so much to you. That wait, this last year and a half, what were the roller coaster of emotions like for you?
For me, it was, it is what it is, you know, like, the band is always going to be secretive, and I mean, you know, anyone that's been on the forum has been very well aware of the fact that, you know, they've been active since 2018, and, you know, we've all been aware of that, and, for me, it's just one of those things where, you know, it is what it is. You know, I understand why they've been through the wait. And, you know, Eddie Trunk was one of those guys who was saying that, you know, prior to COVID, you know, the band was active. The band was putting out their advertisements. The band was getting ready to do the whole promotion thing. But as someone who's been aware of the fact that they were going through with it, you know, I understand why there's been a delay. You know, there's no like, they're just doing a delay just because they want to do a delay. Like, I understand why
they want to torture you.
And I'm okay with why they did it. You know, and for what it's worth, you know, it's kind of like Christmas. Like,
yeah.
You know, you don't want your parents to kind of reveal what they got you for Christmas.
Right.
You know, 4 months before they got you your present. And, you know.
I think
I think that's kind of what Mike Fraser said, too, in our chat with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's been a lot of signs in the last 2 years, you know, and a lot of people at the time, at this time last year, when Eddie Trunk was posting everything he was posting on Twitter saying, oh, it's coming soon. And in February there, he was like, oh, it's meant to be coming now. And most of us in the forum, and I was as well, I was very, well, kind of at the point of disbelief, really. I didn't really believe it anymore. I actually didn't think, I thought the album was a myth now. It was more like something that was just built into the forum. And I never thought we'd actually get it. But, you know, there's a few people in the forum who said Eddie Trunk is legit. And, you know, he's turned out to be right. And here we are now. And, well, I think there's a lot to talk about with this PR campaign, do you not think?
There certainly is, and we'll get into that in a hot second. I want to give you guys a little rundown of what is going to come with this podcast. We are planning to do an album series for you guys, which I think will be really cool. Over the next few months, we're going to take a look into each international release that AC/DC has put out, and we're going to delve through the albums, and we're going to have a lot of fun looking at each individual piece of work, going through the songs, going through the little intricacies. I'm a rhythm guitarist. Spelly's a rhythm guitarist. Toast is learning guitar. I think we each bring something different to the table in terms of consuming AC/DC's music. So I'm very excited for us to get into that as we go through this. And when Power Up does come out, we'll be able to do an actual Power Up episode of reviewing the album, going through it. So that will be really exciting. But let's start with what you talked about. This PR effort that's going on with Power Up right now, this is AC/DC's 17th studio album. It's coming out November 13th internationally. As we said, it's been a long time coming. It sounds like they spent most of the last year tightening up the record a little bit. Mike Fraser mentioned that Angus and Brendan O'Brien had been in Los Angeles doing some overdubs, doing some remixing. And when they filmed the promotional material in February, they had the Power Up box set ready to go. So obviously pretty far along in this process.
Yeah. So I think it kind of seems like this whole social media campaign has been planned. All of it might have been set to a timer in February, you know, and which you just set the dates later because it's all been online. You know, and as you said, they had the Power Up box at the shoot. I mean, it's crazy to see how well they kept that under wraps in February. All we got was one photo, and not one single person kind of publicly, you know, was saying anything about what happened there. So it's an incredible feat from them. And as I said before, it's probably one of the best PR campaigns ever, and certainly the best campaign AC/DC's ever had. You know, and they really played. I think they really got in touch with how the fans were feeling this time around. And they got in touch with that kind of feeling of hope that AC/DC would end of what happened in 2016. I think this campaign kind of recognized that.
Yeah, Spelly. And it was just, I'm sorry to cut you off there, Toast, but I'm curious what Spelly's thoughts on that are. You know, with how the Rock or Bust tour ended, do you view this as a make good with the fans almost in a way?
Toast, are you going to go into it or?
I'm asking you specifically, Spelly, what do you make of that? Do you see this as a do good with the fans, or do you think this is just, they decided, oh, we're just going to invest in our marketing campaign this time?
So, you know, if you're going to ask my personal opinion, the way I see it is, you know, I personally feel like, you know, the whole Rock or Bust album was more of a, you know, it was more of a rally for Malcolm, you know, because anyone that's had a family member that's, you know, had to have gone through the whole dementia thing, you know, anyone that's had to gone through that, you know, they know what it's like, you know, to deal with the horrors of that, you know, and, you know, I've had to deal, you know, my career has, you know, my career deals with waiting tables, but, you know, as a career that has had to, deal with, you know, working in, assisted living facilities and, you know, kind of sorry, I it's kind of hard to deal with putting it out there, but you know, I've worked in assisted living facilities where people,
it's brutal.
You know, their dementia you know, status has only gotten worse as they deal with it, and I've worked in those facilities for older people who've had to go through with it, and you know, it is what it is. And I'm sure Angus, you know, being in the front lines and having to deal with his brother, you know, not recognizing him, not recognizing the family.
Yeah, that's awful.
I personally feel like, you know, I feel like this new album is more to do with Angus and the struggles he's been through over the last couple of years. Because you gotta remember, you know, even though a lot of people want to say, oh, you know, the latter part of the Rock or Bust tour is more about Angus and making sure he fulfills his contractual obligations. But you gotta remember, you know, his older brother George, who's been with him since the early 60s, mid 60s, late 70s, or early 70s, you know, George has been with him since then. Malcolm, you know, Angus's brother, songwriting partner, has been with him since the very, you know, the very beginning. Like, you know, regardless of the whole dementia thing, like, Angus has been through a lot of family things. And I would like, you know, I personally would like to think that this new album is more of a rally for Angus.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's
Angus. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but you know, like, Angus might want to say, you know, this is for Malcolm, you know, this is the last album for Malcolm, but like, I would like to think this is for Angus, because like, you know, Angus comes from a big family, and to come from a family where the majority of his siblings have passed prior to the release of this album,
that's rough,
you know, it sucks. And I'm sorry, I know I shouldn't swear, considering this is supposed to be a more family-oriented, you know,
no, it's
podcast.
Brutal. Brutal. It is. It's no doubt brutal. And I totally agree with your sentiment there, that I think, and kind of based on stories we've heard about this process, it did feel like a bit of a rallying cry, if you will. And through some of the media that we've heard done, they were contacted by the record company. The record company said, hey, is this something you want to do? They had been reunited at the funeral for Malcolm Young. They saw each other all together for the first time. Any dirty water was put to rest at that point.
Yeah, that's the major point, I think.
I think that's very evident, right?
Yeah.
So they come together and they do this record, and it seems like they were all in. And that's exciting.
You've got to remember what Spelling was saying. Angus went through the death of two of his brothers within months of each other.
And then his sister this past year.
Yeah. Came off the back of the 2016 World Tour. And if you read one of the interviews that just come out about Power Up, one of the interesting ones, was it the Rolling Stone magazine or was it the Rolling Stone magazine where he's asked about, what about the 2016 tour? What should have happened? And,
Wasn't,
you know, Angus says, it was, and I think quite a lot of us have been quite brutal about that whole ending. But you've got to remember, as Angus said in the Rolling Stone interview, he had two hard choices. It was either face all the issues of cancelling or go on and just finish the tour of lead singer. And while I personally think he should have just ended the tour, he had no good options really. And he went on and did it. And to come off the back of that, probably absolutely knowing that the fans weren't happy with it, or a lot of them, and then have two of your family members die, AC/DC's falling apart, which is his life. And then, you know, I think the rallying call was at the funeral. I think they all put their, you know, hands in together one more time, and now here they are. And I've just got to be thankful for that. And from the first single, it seems like they're ready to rock again, which is what we need.
Certainly. Certainly so. The media tour for this has been really great so far, and there have been some really good interviews. I've been really impressed by the mentality that they took when they went into the process of recording this album and just going in there, putting the time in, and trying some different stuff, it really sounds like, with Brendan O'Brien and company. So that leaves us with the album Power Up that is coming out, as I said, November 13th, released through Columbia Records. It is a 12-track album, clocking in at around 41 minutes.
You've also got to remember that they were recording this a good few more weeks longer than Rock or Bust.
They did spend more time recording it. Yep. We know, again, that there were overdubs done into 2019, so this thing did take some time. And they came away with 12 tracks here. Realize, Rejection, Shot in the Dark, Through the Mists of Time, Kick You When You're Down, Witch's Spell, Demon Fire, Wild Reputation, No Man's Land, Systems Down, Money Shot, and Code Red. 12 titles, guys, excellent. To me, don't really sound very much like AC/DC songs for the most part.
Absolutely not, and I think that's quite promising in a way for us, is that people were really kind of, I think a lot of people were hoping that it wouldn't be like Rock or Bust and it would be just 10 titles of rock in the name. And if that's what you weren't wanting, then you're going to be absolutely surprised with this one. I mean, I can't even... Sometimes you can kind of picture how AC/DC songs sound just by the title, I think. You know, like, Rock the House, all this crap. And but with this album, I've got no clue at all. A lot of the song titles kind of, they kind of hint towards the song having some kind of lyrical kind of structure, in a way, that some songs in the past that AC/DC have done and later albums haven't had. But I'm extremely excited for it. I wonder what the next single will be. Obviously, Shot in the Dark. Brian mentioned in one of the interviews recently that every song on the album could have been a single. I don't recall him saying that about Rock or Bust. I mean, you know, he's kind of got to say that. But and what I took away from your interview with Mike, John, was the kind of cautious optimism, but optimism and all the same about how good this album's going to be.
Certainly. You know, well, Spelly, when I read that track listing to you, what is your reaction as someone who's delved so deep into the AC/DC catalog, hearing that collection of song titles?
For me, I'm a really big fan of, I really like Starfighters. I'm really big into the new wave of British heavy metal. And to me, looking at the song titles, I got a very new wave of British heavy metal vibes from it. And
interesting.
You know, a couple members have mentioned that, you know, some of the song titles come off of, they seem like they'd fit very well into a Dio album, Heaven and Hell.
I did see that.
You know, that's kind of the vibe I got. But at the same time, you know, like, Angus doesn't have Malcolm's direction, and I would like to think that, you know, Stevie and Malcolm worked more well together on this album, but
Stevie and Angus,
you know, it seems more like, you know, Brendan and Angus work more together, and you know,
guys, sorry, Spud, but can I make a quick point here? This might be an interesting idea, but I was sitting in my room the other night and I thought this album, it kind of feels like it's an album born out of the escape from contractual obligation. Okay, it's not got that feel about it that Rock or Bust and Black Ice had, that it was made to fulfill the contract, right? Not once in interviews so far have Brian or Angus said, oh, this is just, I know they always did it back in the day as a joke.
Well, but to be fair, Angus did say in the interviews, he said the record company called us and asked, do you want to do an album?
Yeah, so what it was is not the creativity this time wasn't pushed from having to do it. The creativity came from them, the boys, choosing willingly to go forward and make an album together. You know, I think that might have an effect on how the output comes, because I don't know, I think I'm just riffing here, but it does make sense.
If that is the case, you know, I do understand, because if I'm being honest, I get very, for those about to rock vibes from the, the song titles, because I mean, look at Spellbound, Evil Walks, I Put the Finger on You, you know,
Yeah,
COD.
They're nothing similar to, you know, the songs on Power Ridge, you know, like Gone Shooting, Down Payment Blues, like, you know, they almost have that mystic kind of feel to it. And
yeah, sure.
I have nothing against that, you know.
Yeah, you're right there. You're on something there. It's got that kind of, the song titles definitely have that kind of, for those bits of rock album vibes, some Spellbound, you know, kind of songs in there.
Yeah, and I think it's also reflective of, and we're not so accustomed to this, right? We're not so accustomed to the human side of Angus Young. Like, when I think Angus Young, I think Angus with a dollar sign replacing the S, you know? But
you've seen that new side to him in these interviews,
but,
for sure.
But,
and hey, may I interject here for a moment?
Of course.
You know, a lot of people think of Angus, you know, Angus with the dollar sign for the S, but like, a lot of people feel like that because of what happened on the Rock or Bus
sure.
tour. But, you know, exactly. you got to take into account, like, what would any of us done, you know, when it comes to the Rock or Bus tour, like, all right, Phil, his situation, it was what it was, you know, to the broad majority of people, most people don't care about the drummer. I mean, ask most people, you know, Motley Crue or Guns N' Roses, what right. they think of the drummer. They're not going to, I'm sorry. I'm going to kind of give a, kind of get kind of filthy here, but most people aren't going to give a shit, you know?
Well, the drummer sound also isn't necessarily as crucial to the rhythm section in some of those other bands.
No, AC/DC, it's like the Stones. But, Stones can't get rid of Charlie Watts.
Right.
AC/DC should never be without Phil Rhodes.
But I also don't want to go down this conversation this is a conversation that is not worth indulging in.
And that's the thing. I don't want to go down that rabbit trail either, but when it comes to the quote-unquote casual fan, like, most people that want to go see AC/DC,
they're going for Angus.
They just want to see Angus. They just want to
see
Brian.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is what it is. You can't refute that. You know, if a band of AC/DC's level is going to make money, it's to see Angus, and, you know, it is what it is.
Sure.
You know, you can't refute that.
But again, I want to go back real quick to this point here about the song titles. It feels reflective of what Angus Young may have been going through in the past couple of years. Realize.
Oh.
Rejection. Through the Mist of Time, which we've learned is somewhat of a reflective song. Kick You When You're Down.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, kick You When You're Down. I'm 100% in the belief that Kick You When You're Down.
You think that's about George and Malcolm?
I don't know if it's about George and Malcolm. Obviously, I haven't heard the album for what it is because, you know, we're more of a fan for him. But Kick You When You're Down absolutely comes across as a track to me that, you know, Angus had to do what he had to do to make sure that all parties involved were satisfied. But, you know, Kick You When You're Down comes across as a track that, you know, the fans weren't necessarily happy with the decisions he made, but, you know, it is what it is. You can't do anything about what happened in the past. And I say this as someone who, I saw them in LA on their first tour with Brian, Chris, Cliff, etc., etc. But I also say this as someone who kind of, you know, I denied going to see them in Fort Lauderdale when Axl Rose came into the picture, you know, and a lot of people gave Angus he had to do, but, you know, if you're in Angus's shoes, what can you do in that scenario?
Well,
you know,
well, I think the song titles are very reflective, and as I said earlier, I think it kind of indicates that there is some sort of lyrical, kind of more lyrically going on than previous albums. Okay, and just by the mere titles alone, but I could be proven wrong. We all could be proven wrong. It could just be big, fat, anthemic choruses, you know. So we've just got to wait and see on that front. But also, in terms of the whole, we don't want to go down this rabbit hole. People on the forum, if they want to read about Slade and everything, there's thousands of threads over the years. All what I'd like to say is this: I think this PR campaign, I think the way they've played it by getting Phil, Cliff, Steve, everyone and showing the lineup and how they even got the members to stand in the photos, right? I think that that's put a full stop to what happened in 2016. I think it's reversed any damage to the legacy. And I think it's allowed Angus and Brian and Cliff to come out of the and, you know, have a bit of breathing space in the interviews. They've had breathing space. Cliff has been there. He's been talking. It's not been sticking to the lines that they had to stick to in Rock or Bust, you know? And I feel like it's a lot different this time. It's a natural album. They're all very happy about it. And while the PR campaign seems very orchestrated, it feels very kind of very smooth, very natural.
And like for me, even if this thing didn't come out, because as they said in the Rolling Stone piece, they went into the studio, and this is something that some of us who have kind of talked about this over the years kind of knew. They went into the studio not having any idea what they were laying down.
Yeah, exactly.
It was we're going to go in there and record some tracks and see what comes of it. Yeah. And just knowing alone that they went in there together and made amends, that was good enough for me. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm thrilled to be getting new AC/DC.
Well, yeah, no, you're absolutely right there, because, you know, I think all three of us, and I know lots of my other friends on the forum would be too, I'd be happy if, what instead of getting what we're getting, I'd be happy if we just got a free song to an EP, right, attached to some sort of greatest hits. And I would be happy with that, knowing that the boys got together and they recorded and they put 2016 behind them and they ended it on a high for Mal, for Angus, for Cliff, for Brian, because Cliff and Brian are just as much integral to the legacy of AC/DC's Angus, in my opinion, and Rod. And I think we're very, very, very grateful to get 12 tracks, because there's a lot of noise over the last 2 years. And I don't want us to just talk about the endless speculation over the last 2 years, but there was a lot of noise at the start, a lot of noise halfway through, that this wasn't what we thought it would be, that this would be some sort of compilation, greatest hits package, and it's not.
No.
And we're very happy, and we've been getting in-depth interviews. John got to interview Mike, and that gave us unparalleled access that the forums never had before. So there we go.
Yeah, we're super grateful for Mike for giving us time, and I highly encourage you to check it out in the archives if you haven't had a chance to yet. It was a look at the AC/DC recording process like we've never had before, so very appreciative of Mike Fraser's time.
Yeah.
Now, Smelly, you brought up a really good point there before, where you talked about the song titles kind of being a throwback to like British heavy metal. On the Rock or Bust record, Angus made it very clear that they were going for like that Beatles vibe of short, concise songs. There were 11 tracks. It was AC/DC's shortest studio album to date. This one, 41 minutes, 12 tracks, slightly longer than Powerage as an album in terms of runtime. Of course, the International Powerage, only 9 songs. So what do you make of a 12-song, 41-minute effort? What are your expectations?
You know.
No, I don't.
I don't
Please
know.
Do indulge.
I don't know if this comes across as a pessimistic or optimistic, but I have no expectations, because my thing is I'm just glad the band got back together. You know, and obviously it came clear that they got back together because of, you know, Malcolm's funeral. You know, it, you know, something I don't think anyone's really addressing is the fact that, like, I don't think as fans, people don't really realize how lucky we are that they got back together. So I'm going in with no expectations. Like, you know, when I first heard a couple segments of Shot in the Dark, if I'm being honest, I felt a little gutted. I don't think it was as good as I thought it was going to be. But
when I heard up to messages from you when I woke up at 7 in the morning and you were like, that teaser, awful. you know.
Yeah. Like, so when I heard the teaser, I felt a little gutted, but when I heard the full track, I was like, all right, well, This is the band back to fucking form, you know, is what any of us were wanting and would have expected. So, like,
yeah,
you know,
and speaking of, I know we don't want to get too nerdy about this, but technically, reading the reviews, and I know John probably has as much as I have, and you too, Eddie, but the reviews, the ones that have taken time to listen to the album and review tracks, and some noise behind the scenes as well, is that apparently this is a very strong album. And I know people said that about Rocker Bus as well. And one man's Rocker Bus thinking it's... Some people thought Rocker Bus was amazing, and some people thought it wasn't too good. But from what we've been hearing so far is that this album is very strong, and some people perhaps made the comparison it's stronger than the last album. So we don't want to get too carried away with ourselves, and I think, you know...
So if I may interject... you know, this might be one of the things you have to edit out of the podcast. I personally don't give a shit. I don't give a shit.
Stop swearing.
I personally don't give a shit what other people's reviews of the album are.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to take it for what I think. But that being said, you know, it seems like we're going to be in for a more, you know, I would never address AC/DC in this, I would never address AC/DC as this, but it seems like we're going to be in for a more poignant album.
A more focused album, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. Production-wise as well.
More focused. And like I said, I think we're going to be in for a more poignant album because I think, you know, I think Angus knows what, you know, Angus is very clear what's going on. Cause I mean, let's be real. Angus lost his closest, confidant, I believe is the term I'm looking for.
Confidant?
You know, he lost his closest confidant, you know, he lost his other closest confidant, George, you know, and I think Angus is very, very well of that. And I think that's going to reflect on the new album. And based on what we've heard from reviews of the new album, I think it's going to show. But like I said, I'm not going to hold that, you know, I'm not going to hold grounds for that. But, you know, I think we all know what we're going to look forward to because of the fact that Angus lost his two closest confidants. Yeah. And
Can I make a small point quickly? And this is another riff that I've been thinking of lately, but it kind of seems, and not to make the Stones comparison again, but it kind of feels like that this campaign has sparked AC/DC into 2020, into the new decade. They're engaging with social media, they're engaging with fans. You know, it seems very... I think even though this album might be the last album, I think AC/DC could expect a little more interaction in the future, I hope. There's all, you know, perhaps after this album, it'll be the archives.
And I need to say this. Angus said in the Rolling Stone article, he's not opposed to making music, you know, going forward.
I don't think this, you know, I don't want to speculate past this album, really, because you could literally spend 4 hours.
No, you can't. You can't.
No. But we've got everything to look forward to. But and that first single was amazing.
No. And I just want to make the point here about. The you're talking about losing the confidants with this record. We heard from the Mike Fraser interview too. Brendan O'Brien's influence is extremely notable here.
Exactly, extremely.
And based on what he was saying, and some of the context clues that we've received from Angus too, it almost sounds like this is almost an album co-written by Brendan O'Brien using Malcolm riffs. Is that too much of a statement to make?
I think from listening to your interview with Fraser is that I think Fraser, God bless him, I think he said a little bit more than what he intends to, but I think a lot of us had a good indication, a good hint, a kind of gut feeling that Brendan O'Brien had a lot to do with the Rocker Bus album, and I think this time around it's been confirmed. I think Brendan is a lot more than a producer on this album.
Sure.
I think he's absolutely a co-writer, and you know, we don't want to get bogged in the details. He's obviously getting paid a lot but I think, am I upset that Brendan is assisting Angus in the lyrical side while Angus provides the melodies? I think I'm set on that. But is Brendan O'Brien this time round caused the band's more functional? Rod's there while the band's on an uplift, on the trajectory onwards. You know, Rocker Bus was very sketchy when they went into the studio, but this time round, is Brendan really gluing it together? And from what we've heard so far, it sounds very good.
Yeah.
Production-wise, I can't fault the single. I think it's very good. There is a little bit of compression that annoys me on Rod's drums. And you can hear that Brian's vocals are layered. But that's nothing new. And I'm very excited to see what we get from Brendan O'Brien on this again.
Now, Spelly, I'm curious what you have to think about this, because I think you're probably in the same camp as me. While there are some things I don't love about Brendan's producing with AC/DC, the one thing I think he does do very well is get the most out of each guy performance-wise. And you're someone who has studied Stevie to his idiosyncrasies. Would you agree with that assessment?
I think Brendan got Stevie down to a T on the Rock or Bust album. I mean, you know, look at, Emission Control, Dogs of War, or Canines of Chaos.
Oh.
Rock or Bust, like, I think Brendan has Stevie to a T.
I agree.
It's kind of hard to comment just based on a shot in the dog, or, you know, shot in the dog. You know, it kind of comes into what I commented on before. Stevie said that he wasn't trying to emulate Mal, but at the same time, when he came in to record Rock or Bust, you know, Angus, you know, kind of filling the same role. Like, people think, oh, well, you know, Stevie tried to
be Malcolm. You know,
Stevie tried to be Malcolm, but the thing is, you know, Stevie did his own thing without being Malcolm. I mean, look at Emission Control. Look at Rock or Bust. Look at Dogs of War. Like, Stevie did his own thing, and it was very, in my opinion, it was very reminiscent of Starfighters. And, you know, if you don't listen to Starfighters, I absolutely recommend listening to them, because I think they're some band. Again, sorry if that goes against
you're good
the family friendly aspects of the star of this podcast.
But yes, Brendan's bringing out the best in this band in terms of performance, and I don't think it's been any more evident as with Shot in the Dark, as we get into that conversation. Shot in the Dark was released this past week. We had an awesome time on the forum doing our Zoom watch-along party. If you missed that, it's available for download on the forum. We had such a great time with that. Just nonetheless, on the anniversary of the leak of Rock or Bust, 6 years ago to that night, which is just so cool that we were able to do that.
Oh, great night.
So, your initial reactions to Shot in the Dark, guys. I know, Spelly, you had said that you weren't too excited about it when you were hearing the teasers, then you heard the song, it changed. What about you, Toast? What were your impressions?
Initially, euphoria. I don't think the song, I think the song could have been anything. In the first hour of its release, it could have been anything. It was 5 in the morning. I was exhausted. Had a bunch, the song's great. At first, I had some issues with the production because I'm just too, you know, nerdy about that kind of stuff. I found it a bit too, and then I kind of relaxed a bit. I really like the kind of, that kind of intro that Angus is playing. I'm not a technical person in that kind of sense, but I really love that kind of
the intro.
Yeah, and then I love the layering. The song's just great. It's just a catchy, hooky AC/DC song. It's better than Rock or Bust, in my opinion. I'm really impressed with it. And I'm excited for the rest of it. And you know, we're probably going to go on later to rank all the singles. But from what I've heard so far, Shot in the Dark, very good. I'm excited for the video, if that is going to be the video. We don't know if it is or not, but yeah.
I would bet my left testicle that it is, but...
the channel, what I see quickly is that the channels are very full, okay? Both channels are very full throughout the whole song. You know, you've got a blasting in both ears, which some people think they won't like. It's not the stripped back AC/DC some people desire, but it's absolutely great. It's more off Rock or Bust, but better, I think. So there we go.
My approach coming in was I want a Stiff Upper Lip-esque album that's a little heavier. And when I hear Shot in the Dark, that's what I get. That's exactly what I wanted with AC/DC. And I understand it's a more mid-tempo stomper song versus high-speed, super up-tempo, blazing guitar riffs. But, I mean, for a band that is in their late 60s, early to mid-70s, this is what you get. And I don't think you can be too upset about this caliber of a product. Yeah, it's fairly predictable, but they tried some new things. I love the second verse harmonies. That was something I wasn't expecting. That's a heavy Brendan O'Brien influence right there. And let's call spade a spade. Brian Johnson sounds freaking incredible. I don't care if he's doubled. I don't care if he's got a lot of reverb. I think Brian Johnson, after everything he went through, came in there, sang with a purpose, and sounds awesome on this track.
Well, me and 900 in the forum had a discussion on text a week ago, and it was this: is he reverbed or is he layered?
It's both. He's both doubled, and there's a lot of. I mean, do you pick that up, Spelly, too? That there's some doubling going on, and there's a bit of reverb too.
So, if I may. Interject. I definitely think there is an effect on Brian, but that being said, it is absolutely most noticeable on the second verse. Because the part that gets me, like, you know, gets my the hairs on my neck going is on the second verse when it's like, through the broad daylight.
The harmony part.
The harmony on the second verse, like, that's what gets me fucking... Sorry, I know. Again, breaking the family values.
It's out the window at this point.
It gets me going, like... And I commented on this on the forums, but, like, when Brian's like, we get to pump it, like, it sounds straight out of the Razor's Edge era. Like
his delivery, you mean?
Yes. Like,
well, he hits a note just in that song.
It's just when he says pumping, it's just so goddamn strong.
For me, the line of his that stands out is, I need a shot of you. There's a certain growl to it, and the elongating of it, to me. Man, it's just so great.
It's a delivery we've not heard from Brian before. I think that's it. It's new. And I think that's what's getting a lot of people excited. It sounds new, this single. Yes, it has elements of just the typical AC/DC song, but it's got Brian delivering lines that we've never heard Brian do before. I don't think so, anyway.
And do you think that's just him coming into his own at this point?
Oh, I think it's a bit of both. I think it's the kind of creativity of the sessions, how they were all feeling, the way the wind was blowing, and it was also Brendan probably, you know, stepping in a lot more. And it's got a lot to do, I think, with the integrity of the sessions. You know, Mike talked about it. Phil was there from the start. It was very integral sessions, very motivated. You know, Rock or Bust was a bit different, so I think this is less choppy, which is Rock or Bust. Very choppy that was, and that's no fault. But this is very integral. I think they're all allowed to take their own creative space. And Mike mentioned that, you know, there's no dictation in the band, right? So Brian can go in with Brendan and, you know, change some lines, deliver the lines. Stevie can play how he wants. Cliff can play how he wants. And Brock can play how he wants. And that's, I think that comes through on the song, and you can hear it. I think that is Brian. I think that is Brian doing what he wants to do. Yeah.
And listen, it's so great to hear Phil stomping back there. Cliff is super bright in the mix, and I really love that. And
kind of wish Phil was a little bit higher in the mix, but that's just a little tiny point on my part. I kind of wish he was, but I think in other songs he probably will shine through. I think it's a lot more to do with how much is going on in the song. I think that's why Phil's a little bit behind.
It's a song that ages better by the day for me personally. So that's been my personal experience with it. I really enjoy Stevie's rhythm on this song. It plays with the dynamics of AC/DC well, how the two guitars counterbalance each other. Shot in the Dark, I felt delivered. Mike Fraser said it, Brian said it. It was hard for them to pick a single for this record, and they settled on that. So we are going to see what's going to come of the rest of them. I want to wrap us up here, guys, by doing a quick little ranking This was a great forum topic. I forget who started it, but if you did start it, kudos to you. I can look it up real quick as we do this. But I want to rank the first release singles post Thunderstruck. So when I say first release, I mean the first songs released for each record. So we're talking Hard as a Rock, Stiff Upper Lip, Rock and Roll Train, Play Ball, and Shot in the Dark. How do you guys rank those from best to worst? And, you know, worst is a relative term, obviously, but top to bottom, how do you rank them? And Toast, we'll start with you here.
Yes. Oh, so I would say, maybe controversial, maybe not. People in the forum might find this controversial. I think Rock and Roll Train is the best single they've done.
Okay.
I think it classic AC/DC, that is. Very classic. I think it can add a little bit more added to it, but it's classic. Then I don't know if it's just this kind of new effect, Shot in the Dark. It's just new. You kind of view it with the kind of misty, romantic eyes, you know. I'm putting that second. I'm putting Rocker Boss third. I'm putting Stiff after that. And then I'm putting Hard as a Rock last. I don't know. Some days I'm probably thinking, Christ, Stiff Upper Lip's the best song we've done in 30 years. But no, not today. It's Rock and Roll Train, Rocker Boss, Shot in the Dark, all this stuff.
And what about Play Ball? Where'd you say?
Play Ball? I thought we were just talking first singles.
Yeah, Play Ball is the first single.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Oh, that's my first. That's my Play Ball. That's not as strong as Shot in the Dark or Rock and Roll Train or Stiff Upper Lip. I'm saying it's stronger than Hard as a Rock, though.
Okay. All right. What about you, Spelly?
How far back are we going?
We're post-Thunderstruck. So after Thunderstruck. So Hard as a Rock, Stiff Upper Lip, Rock and Roll Train, Play Ball, Shot in the Dark.
I actually got to think about this.
Well, do you agree with Toast's assessment that Rock and Roll Train is the strongest of all those? Because I don't.
Absolutely not. I think, if I'm being very honest, okay. So Play Ball tied with Shot in the Dark.
For the weakest or for the strongest?
No. For the strongest.
Okay, so you think Play Ball? You think Play Ball is the strongest?
Interesting, man.
So Play Ball tied with Shot in the Dark. Then Stiff Upper Lip. And then Hard as a Rock.
And then Train last. Interesting.
You've got the exact opposite from me.
What's your rationale behind all that? Because so, Play Ball at number one, that shocks me, quite frankly.
That's interesting.
So can I be honest? So let me be honest for a second.
Please be.
My thing with Play Ball is that, you know, I, as everyone knows, that is frequent of the forums, I am not a big fan of Black Ice. I don't think it has the same testosterone that most AC/DC albums have.
I agree. I agree with that.
I really like Rocker Bus, so I really love Play Ball. Shot in the Dark, you know, I wasn't sold on it at first, but having heard the whole song, you know, it made me, look, let's be real. The Power Up is most likely the last album we're going to hear from AC/DC. So, like, Shot in the Dark, like, you know, the first time I heard it, I was blackout drunk. It made me really happy to hear it. You know, I've got relationship issues going on, and the first time I heard it, it almost made me cry. You know, not to sound like a fucking pussy or anything, but, like, it got me in that mindset. And it is what it is. And when I first heard Rock and Roll Train when I was 11 or 12, it just sounded like AC/DC by the numbers. It didn't really do anything for me. So
gotcha. Well, okay. I want to give you mine here. I'm going to go with Stiff Upper Lip number one, followed by, I think, Shot in the Dark, then Rock and Roll Train, then Hard as a Rock, then Play Ball. I'm really surprised Stiff Upper Lip is so low on your guys' list. To me, Stiff Upper Lip has all the bit of the makings of the true and tried ingredients of AC/DC.
I agree, John.
You've got the rhythm of Malcolm Young playing perfectly into the lead of Angus Young, complementing each other so well. You've got Phil Rudd smacking the crap out of the snare. You have that blues sound, and I understand blues, the AC/DC, isn't for everybody, but guess what? Blues are embedded in every single AC/DC track.
Yeah, and, okay.
And I understand Brian's voice may not be for everyone there too, but go ahead.
It's a production to me, John.
And I understand, and I get that. I understand the drier production. The drier production may not be for everybody, and I get that.
I will.
But that doesn't hold me back from enjoying the song as is. As I've talked about on the forum in recent months, Blow Up Your Video has grown on me tremendously in the past couple of years, and I can look past the production because I think there's some great songs on it. So I feel the same way as Stiff Upper Lip. The lyrics are some of the better lyrics of all those songs that we've listed. Brian's got an angry growl to him. I think it's a top 15-20 Brian Johnson track, period. So that's my number one, followed by Shaun the Dark, which we've talked about extensively. Rock and Roll Train, to me, has all the makings of an AC/DC classic, but the lyric quality brings it down tremendously, followed by a somewhat uninspiring solo. So that's where that kind of hits me. Hard as a Rock is kind of just a track for me. It's a fine track and not much more. And then Play Ball was really exciting when it first came out, but it hasn't aged particularly well for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good countdown. And as you said, the album's coming out soon. Hopefully we'll review it in detail once we actually hear it, but for now we're all just giddy fanboys like the rest of us.
Certainly. And like I said, we're planning to bring you guys an album series, so it should be fun. We're looking forward to getting you guys plenty of new podcasts coming up in the next few months. It should be really exciting. We hope you guys enjoyed this one, this first edition of the ACCFans.net podcast. And let's power up, folks. We'll see you guys next time.
See you later, guys.
Power up. Power up.